on the Coyote Sports Network. From Learfield IMG College, this is the YokeCast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics, taking you inside the stories of Coyote athletes, coaches, administrators, and more. Now, here's your host, John Thayer.
It's another edition of YokeCast, and this week we talk football with South Dakota signing 27 players to join the football program. Jay Elson of Midco Sports Network stops by to break down the class, and we start this week with Athletic Director at the University of South Dakota, David Herbster.
David, we've just about wrapped up a very, very busy stretch of home events, and I know there's still some to get through the weekend as teams get into the holiday break. But wrapping kind of this long stretch up, and part of the reason is because of volleyball getting the opportunity to play in the postseason and play at home in the postseason. And they did that this week in the NIVC championship game, the opportunity to play at home. Obviously didn't go the way that they would have liked or USD fans would have liked, but really needed to see them get the opportunity to play in the postseason and find success throughout that postseason tournament.
You know, it was a great run, I think, all season long, but specifically if we look at just the tournament run, to be able to play all five of those matches at home. I think in a couple of ways they earned it. A few things went our way in order to make sure that we could host those things. A lot of the other schools had facility conflicts. We were able to make it work. We had a lot of basketball games in the middle of that whole run too. But you know, as it culminates into the championship game, in one end you're disappointed in the outcome, but two, it was an unbelievable match against two really good teams. Somebody has to win those things. We couldn't close out either one of those first two sets. In the third one, there was just no momentum left in us. And it was just two real, what I saw was just two heavyweights just going at it toe to toe. But to be able to pull all that together, to have a new volleyball attendance record set at that championship game, the crowd was in it, the energy was there. Just a really, really special night for this volleyball team to really kind of recognize their success all year long. You finished the season 31-3. That's pretty special. And so I think as a competitor, you go into postseason realizing at this point in time with the NCAA tournament and this NIVC tournament, only two teams are going to walk away the last match of the year with a win. And, you know, in that run, we went 4-1 during the tournament, didn't come out on top, but it's an invaluable experience for these, for this team, this coaching staff, and these ladies to get five extra matches in, to get another couple extra weeks of practice in, something for those young players on the team to learn from and to grow from. And I think it's a special time to be able to embrace what they went through, what we witnessed from a community supporting a volleyball team. And remember, it wasn't but 5 years ago that we were up in the Den and the Upper West Gym, and we can only put maybe 350 people in there. To fast forward 4 or 5 years, and now we put 2,431 fans in that place. There's probably more in there than that, but that's what we could count when they came in. So all in all, it was a special year, a special group of young ladies who, after kind of getting snubbed by the NCAA tournament, what I saw on Tuesday night were two teams that belonged in the NCAA tournament. That was the quality of play that night. And I know a lot of fans have probably come in, and for a lot of fans, and I've talked to quite a few of them, that was the first volleyball match they've ever seen. And they were kind of blown away about the quality of competition that they saw. The one, for those that don't ever go to volleyball, I think what they're amazed at is there's no time to relax. A rally, a match, a point, you're on the edge of your seat almost the entire time. You don't rest. In football, you get breaks. In basketball, you have a 30-second clock. As many timeouts as you want, it seems. And some sports are slow. Volleyball's not slow. It is action, and it is movement all the time. So can't thank the community and our fans enough for their support of this team, the energy that they brought to that match. I can tell you I talked with the athletic director at Georgia Tech, who made the trip, unbelievably complimentary of the facility. But certainly once the match was done, of our crowd, our atmosphere, and the energy that type of game, that was a championship environment. The officials that I talked to along the way, and then certainly the officials from the NIVC that were here, who are the same ones that run the WNIT, kind of knew what they were in for, but from a volleyball perspective, this beat their expectations as well. So I do think not only did this team do this university and this state proud, I think our fans certainly match that by what they brought and the energy they brought on Tuesday night.
Is it pride, or what goes through your mind when you're standing there probably at the Core Trust Club or wherever, you know, you walk around at a different moments and you walk around and look around and say, this is a championship game. We just put over 2,000 people in the stands for this, and you can see the growth in the fan base for a specific sport, which is obviously volleyball, but it obviously helps the growth of the fan base overall. What goes through your mind when you just step out and kind of soak in the atmosphere in an event like that?
There is a lot of pride. There is a lot of, wow, we did this. And to have a product on the court that people want to follow, and you can have a great product on the court with bad people as a part of that product. We have a good product on the field with good people. And I take that across the board to all of our sports. But you walk out there and you see how people have risen up to support you and to follow you and to yell and scream and clap for you. Hard to put that into words, but it ends up being a feeling that you get when you walk around and you see that you can't truly describe. You know, it's not a me thing, it's a we thing. And it's something that not only this coaching staff, the staff here in the athletic department, the coaching staff, but frankly, this campus, everybody has a hand in what the atmosphere has become, and not just at volleyball, but a lot of our venues now, that it really is. Slowly we've been able to see that uptick. And, you know, I really wish it didn't take an event like a championship event to get people to come out for something like that. But you know what? I realize that we put our fans through the meat grinder the last few weeks with the amount of events and the games that we've had here. So you appreciate and value it when you can get it, because not every place has the fan base and the support that we can have and that we do have here.
You talk about that stretch of home events, and there's going to be a little break in that coming up here with the Christmas break. I know obviously students are on Christmas break. A lot of student athletes, though, they don't get much of a Christmas break. You look at basketball, for instance, they'll play this Sunday, and then a week later they start conference play. So just a few days in there. But it is one of those things where there is a break coming up, and probably good for a lot of people.
Everybody. I think about that. You know, this group has just grounded out for the last 3 weeks. You know, it seems like forever ago that we had our last home football game. And when we beat the Jacks, and that really started our string. So if you fast forward, that's a good solid 3+ weeks that we've been going hard at this. The Christmas, and I've told our staff the holiday time, I don't want to see anybody in here. We don't have anything going on. You need to take time, recharge the battery, spend the time with family, because we've certainly, in some cases, have had to abandon our family a little bit and take care of our family here in the department. But this has been one where we don't get this stuff done without our crew, without our staff to make it all happen. So it will be at least for me, I think it'll be maybe about 4 or 5 days of just put the phone down, except for maybe seeing what you're putting out there on Twitter, and then right back at it, because I think we gear right back up again. Basketball start right back up again soon after Christmas, and we have our first home basketball game on January 5th, so we'll get back on the wheel and keep rolling again.
Yeah, it's one of those things, isn't it, that you feel like there's going to be a little bit of a break, but you're going to blink and we're going to be right back into the thick of conference games and everything else and a lot of other home events, and before you know it, spring will be here and track will be hosting events and softball and everybody else as well. So enjoy a few days, right? Because it's going to pick up real quick.
See, now you got me thinking about the spring, right? Because I know I look at our spring between, you know, the softball events, track events, and then we're also hosting the Summit League Outdoor Track Championships. We're going to be also hosting the South Dakota Special Olympic State Summer Games again. So, let's throw some couple graduations in there and let's finish the dome. And it'll be, again, I really feel like it was a sprint to the finish here at the end of 2019. And it'll be a sprint to the finish and a hard one once we get to the towards the end of the school year, as so much we'll end up either hosting or hosting so much right there towards the end that it's going to be another grind.
Well, we look forward to whatever is to come. This is the time of year for Christmas wishes. It's the time of year for New Year's resolutions where people maybe start to put a plan together for themselves over the course of the next year. So let's get into your wish list for the athletic department for 2020. What would be on the Christmas or New Year's wish list for Athletic Director David Herbster?
Well, it just so happens I have a list right here, John. I don't know how that happened. But as I got to thinking about this, I kind of put together a little list. So my first one was I'd really like a $125 million scholarship endowment. That'd be special. And then probably beat state soon after that. I'd really like an indoor practice facility. And then probably beat state. That would be a good one at that. I really want to win the South Dakota Showdown Series again. And then I want to beat state. I'd really like, and our fans will appreciate this one, I'd really like more parking lots around the dome. Cement parking lots, not the grass stuff. Beat state. I'd like beer sales in the dome and the arena. And then I want to beat state. I want to win the Summit League Commissioners Cup again. That was special. I want to beat state. I'd really like a 5-year contract. That'd be nice. But then I'd like to beat state. I need to finish the fundraising for the dome, and then so I can start to kick off fundraising for the east side renovations and start to get that planned out. And then I'd like to beat state. I'd like to get close to this, but I'd like the athletic department GPA to be 4.0. That's not hard to probably get to. Maybe two of my semesters added together to get 4.0. But then I'd like to beat state. I'd really like to see either indoor or outdoor. I'm going to try to get to both just in case. But I'd really like to see Chris Nielsen in person win a national championship in the pole vault. And then I'd like to beat state. I think that's it. I had a couple of other pages here, but someone took them. Maybe it's that naughty list thing. That they came and took them from me.
Well, it sounds like you got it covered. And we'll have some people write that stuff down, and we'll keep track of it as we try to accomplish it in 2020. David, appreciate it very much as we wrap up this portion of the calendar year and look forward to 2020. Always appreciate your time.
Thanks, John. Hope you have a very Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year, and appreciate you as always, man.
The South Dakota football team this week signed 20 players to national letters of intent, and 7 others accepted an offer of admissions to USD. Jay Elson of Midco Sports Network joined me to talk about some of the highlights of this year's class. South Dakota announced this week its signing class on Wednesday for the 2019 signing class for football coming in next season. And for many fans and for many people, you look at it as the future of the football program. And to help us take a look at what the signing class looks like for the University of South Dakota, we bring in Jay Elson of Midco Sports Network. Jay, you have seen obviously a handful of recruiting classes for USD, and I know under Coach Nielsen they've been trying to build this direction for a long time, but this is a good-sized class that they bring in, and a class that, as they should, they feel good about a group of players who can come in the next maybe year or 2 years or even 3 years down the road really be impact players at USD.
Yeah, and you know what? Honestly, I think if you don't feel good today about what you've gotten done here, then you probably have a whole world of problems. But yeah, every coach in America right now feels pretty good about what they've done. But I think USD is, you know, from the standpoint they were looking at it this year, the blueprint changed a little bit for them compared to what it's been the first few years under Coach Nielsen. And I think when he first took over, it was the word he used was deficiencies. There was a lot of them positionally across the board that needed to be addressed, particularly in the offensive line. That's one that we've seen them really, really target here over the last couple of years in particular. Defensive line has been another spot where they've tried to add a lot of bodies over the last couple of years as well. And now they've kind of transitioned to the point where those groups are getting, if they're not full, they're close to full, where they feel like there's enough bodies there and enough youth coming up through the system that that they can kind of focus in some other areas. And I think this class shows that. While there's still five offensive linemen in it, beyond that, I think you touch a lot of different areas of the field. Coach Nielsen talked about how they address needs at all three levels of the defense. It touches every spot on the offense. And I think when you could start to build your classes and keeping in mind balance while doing it, and being successful in landing the targets that you're trying to attain, I think that has to be good news. And so I think there's a lot of reason, just for that reason alone, to be pretty excited about this first group of 20 here for 2020. And they're not quite done, but they're very close to done. And I think that's the other positive here, is that they've secured, the lion's share of what they're bringing in for the 2020 class already here in mid-December. And so I think that's the goal for most coaching staffs, try to get most of it out of the way early. And with this new layout of the whole signing days, situation, it certainly appears that the Coyotes were able to do just that.
When you look at positions, and Jay, you talk about the offensive line, they added five offensive linemen, and this is a group that we see this as a group that's still fairly young, but they're growing in experience. And that offensive line is just a position that we know in the Missouri Valley Football Conference, you better have depth at that position.
Absolutely. And I think you've seen that when they've really struggled, particularly in 2018, there just wasn't a lot of depth there. And they were, the process had started, but you just had a bunch of guys you were trying to redshirt and make sure they were ready physically to go, because that's one spot. Certainly, defensive line, you could make that case too, where you just physically, you have to be in your grown up body, and it takes some time to transition from high school to college that way. And so, I think the best course of action whenever possible, all across the board, but particularly with those groups, is to be able to redshirt those guys, get them in the weight room, get some weight on them, get them stronger, and continue to work on the fundamental things that will make them successful offensive linemen, not only in FCS football and Division I, but particularly in the Missouri Valley Football Conference, because as you and I know, everybody else out there knows, it's a smash mouth kind of league. And you better be physical on the line of scrimmage or you're going to struggle. And that's something that's been a real concerted effort with this program over the last couple of years. And just adding further depth to that group here with this group that was announced on Wednesday.
Jay, it's no surprise, really, that defensive back led the group with six players out of the you had 20 that signed national letters of intent, seven others that are walking onto the football program, but six out of those 27 are defensive backs. And I think we saw this year there's some guys who can play, some guys that are talented currently at USD. But I think what we learned very early in this football season was, as we talk about offensive line, the depth just wasn't there at defensive back this season. And that caused a bit of a I guess growing pains a little bit early part of the football season.
Yeah, it did. And unfortunately, it seems like the injury bug finds the spot where you could least afford to take injuries, and it attacks right there. That's kind of the situation they found themselves in, where you had Mark Collins go down, Cam Tisdale go down, Bakari Goodson go down. And those are guys that you were counting on to give you a lot of reps during games this year to help bring some of those other guys along a little bit more slowly. And it just wasn't able to be the way that it worked out, because those guys were pressed into action due to those injuries. And you could make the case that they'll be better off later for that. But it did certainly impact the way that the team was able to perform on the back end defensively. And so, you're right. I think this was the most obvious position group that was going to, be targeted was that DB group. And they certainly did that with six guys coming in and certainly, trying to address those numbers issues. And so that if they get into a situation like that, they've just got more bodies to work with, more bodies to choose from, and hopefully for their sake, more guys that are ready to go when and if their number gets called.
Jay Elson of Midco Sports Network with us as we talk about the recruiting class, the signing class for the University of South Dakota. Jay, a couple of these guys have been probably a couple of the more talked about guys amongst social media or fans, if you will. One of them, Vincent Starling, whose brother Jakari, of course, is on the team and was really good this year. I thought took a huge step for USD's defense this year. But Vincent Starling, a young man who held offers, FBS offers, was once committed to South Florida, decided South Dakota was where he wanted to go. This guy, it'll be interesting to watch his growth at USD. He could be a real impact player.
Yeah, if you look at the ratings and everything, this, I mean, there's a lot of people. If you read about this stuff, and I know you and I do, because this is part of the job for us, but we pay pretty close attention, and if you can find a lot of written stuff out there about what kind of player Vincent Starling is and how highly regarded he is in the recruiting world. And there's some people that think he might be the best recruit in all of FCS football. I mean, that's saying something. And you look at what he brings in terms of size. He's all of 6'3", maybe even pushing 6'4". And 215 pounds already coming out of high school. So you think about that, you get him in that weight room a little bit, get him working with Coach McLeod, the rest of the strength staff, not to mention, you know, his linebacker coaches and working on the fundamental side of things and improving there. And just the raw natural ability that he's bringing into the program. You know, that's a potential, you know, a guy with a very bright future. Let's put it that way. And, you know, if he comes in and does everything he needs to do, then he is going to be, you know, instant improvement for that defense. And you know, it remains to be seen exactly how quickly that impact will come. But with the ability, if you watch his tape and see the different kinds of things that he can do, boy, he's a major, major impact and a major, major win in the recruiting sense of things. So great job by the staff to secure that. Certainly you got to think Jakari maybe had a little something to do with it too, and so he should probably get at least a little bit of the credit as well.
Yeah, well, we'll let him keep playing on defense since he helped get Vincent here. How about that?
Yeah.
Hey, another one that really I think a lot of people are excited about is Carson Camp. He's a quarterback out of Bloomington, Illinois, and it's easy to get excited about a quarterback who was very talented in high school when your team has just lost a tremendous quarterback and one of the best to ever play. The Coyotes, the last two quarterbacks that they've had have been two of the statistically best quarterbacks to play at USD, and they're looking for what's next. Now, obviously, there's some guys in the program, but Carson Camp, a guy who Coach Nielsen says is an early enroll, he's going to enroll in January and be around the program in the springtime, which is going to help him get acclimated very quickly. And just by watching some of the things that some of his highlights, boy, a quarterback who looks like he'll have a chance to really compete in this league.
Yeah, he can do a lot of really good things. And, you know, I think you look at where he's from right off the bat, he's from Bloomington, Illinois. That's Illinois State's backyard. The Coyotes got him. And Illinois State offered him, too. And they won that battle. And this is a guy that, you know, everything you look at, everything you read, everything you watch on him, it's all impressive. But I actually had the opportunity to meet Carson prior to the Youngstown State game, and you know, he came up and introduced himself to me, and I had a 15-minute conversation with him, John. I was completely blown away with his maturity. You know, at the time he told me a little bit about what went into his decision and all that, and he also told me what you know, kind of the final thing was that convinced him that this was the place that he wanted to be. And he talked about the journalism department and the people that he met there, Michelle Van Monen, Kyle Miller, and how impressed he was with them and that program. And he said that was it. Once I met those guys, I was in. And I thought that was kind of a cool thing too, that it, you know, it doesn't, you always have to remember it's more than just about the coaches and the athletics and all that. Like, these guys are coming here to get an education. And that part of it helped sell him on USD, and I thought that was really cool, and just to get to know him a little bit that way, and just to understand who he was. I was impressed with who he was as a young man. He had something about him that seemed pretty special, and remains to be seen. It's a lot of work. It's a big challenge for any freshman to come in as a quarterback. Your head gets swimming a little bit with that transition, but he seemed like a guy that was certainly capable mentally to come in and get that done. And then, as you said, coming in as an early enrollee and getting to participate full go in spring ball, that is going to serve him really, really well. It's going to serve the program really, really well to get one of those guys in there right off the bat and get him learning the system. And then, that sets a great tone going into the off season. And then as he comes into fall camp, he'll just be that much closer, ready to go. And, who knows how that competition is going to go. Great news to get a quarterback, especially in early, so that he can start learning and put himself in the best position to compete at the level that he wants to come fall.
Well, it'd be interesting, certainly, to see how it impacts him and the program. I think someone that fans should get excited about, and we'll see if he becomes the starting quarterback at some point in his career. All right, we talked about Carson Camp. We talked about Vincent Starling. Jake, the fans are going to want to know, on this list, who are guys who maybe have a chance to come in and move the needle right away, be impact players right away? You glance at this list, do you see any that jump off of the page at you that might be guys come in and maybe guys that fans should pay attention to going into fall camp and early part of next year?
Yeah, I got a couple, and Carson and Vincent certainly would be near at or near the top of that list. I'd also include the Daytwon Blackwood kid from Fort Pierce, Florida, as a wide receiver. From what I've heard about him athletically, he's a pretty special kid. Tevin McKelvey, who's coming in as one of those defensive backs out of Gardner, Kansas, is another name I've heard a lot about. Mike Manceray, the running back from Columbus, Ohio. You look at him physically, and he's an impressive-looking young man. So it just seems to have that physical part of it down already. Looking at him and judging him that way, looks like a guy who at least has a chance to contribute. Chase Lopez, go watch his film if you haven't. He's a safety out of Colorado. He's the one that you're certainly going to want to pay attention to. Josiah, I'm not sure exactly how you say his last name yet. I'm still learning these guys, but Janice, I think Josiah Janice, another one of those D-backs out of Florida. I've heard some good things about him as well. So those would be all guys that I pay particular attention to. Learn those numbers as soon as that fall roster is released so that you can keep an eye on them during fall camp, because they've got the potential. There's no guarantee that they're going to make a real impact as a true freshman. But if you're looking at guys who have a chance to see the field right now, I'm going to throw those names out.
Well, certainly, as we've noticed this year, it's tough to get on the field as a true freshman. You got to be certainly a special athlete to do that. All right, Jay, last thing for you. We look at the roster breakdown, and we start looking at this thing by state. There were 13 different states represented in this class. By the way, 14 offensive players, 13 defensive players. Florida had 5 players. But the next number down, 4, both Kansas and South Dakota. So the second highest state with recruits is South Dakota, right here in the backyard. And I know some of these other guys are going to be region guys in other states that aren't far away. But 4 players from the state of South Dakota, I know that's important to this coaching staff. And they found some guys who they're going to look at and see if they can make an impact here.
Yeah, and that's one thing that really stands out is if you look at that group of in-state kids this year, for one thing, 4 of them in the early period, that's a solid number. And a couple of them right off the bat, you really jump out. The Zach Witte kid from Sioux Falls, went to Sioux Falls Christian, or is going to Sioux Falls Christian, will graduate from there. Tight end, he's staying 6'6", 225 already. And then Caden Burley is one of the more dynamic football players in the entire state of South Dakota. And Canton basically rode him to a state championship this year. He's a guy who can do a lot of things. He kicked. He played a little quarterback, running back, wide receiver. Did just about everything you could ask a guy to do. Played both sides of the ball. Really all three phases of the game. He had a major impact for a team that won a state championship this year. So he's certainly a very, very big get, not even just as a local kid, but as a football player. And then you look at Ben Coles as a lineman I know that they like out of Sioux Falls Roosevelt. And then Josh Crownover was one of the additions late here. Linebacker, played some quarterback for Bonhomme this year. Really tough kid. He's a really obviously accomplished high school wrestler that had an opportunity to walk on at the University of Nebraska as a wrestler and chose to come walk on as a football player at the University of South Dakota instead and stay home. And all of these kids have a lot of great qualities about them, you know, and it goes beyond just the athletic side of things. Talked to Coach Nielsen, he said all of them, and he helped close the deal personally on all of those local kids. He said one of the things that stand out is that, you know, we wanted leadership qualities in all these guys, and we found them. You know, they're great football players. They're great athletes, they're great students, but they're also potential leaders for our football program down the road. I think that's something that he's pretty proud of, that, you know, not only did they get these four high-quality in-state kids right off the bat here in the early period, but got guys that could have a major impact in a lot of ways on this football team down the road.
I look forward to seeing it and how everything progresses. Obviously, a time of year where fans everywhere get excited, coaching staffs get excited again, and before you know it, we'll be into spring ball, and then fall camp. We'll roll around. We'll be back to another football season here very, very quickly. Jay, great stuff. Thanks so much for the time, as always, breaking down the signing class for USD. Exciting time, as we talked about, for a lot of people, so always fun to talk about it. Really appreciate your time.
My pleasure, Johnny.
Midco SN is your television home for USD Athletics, and Jay Elson is usually the one to broadcast those games. If you don't already follow Jay on Twitter, do so at Elson Midco SN to stay up to date with South Dakota Athletics. Before we wrap up the show this week, let's take a look at upcoming events in Coyote Athletics. It's a lighter week with the holiday coming up, so let's take a look at what's to come. Friday, the Coyote men's basketball team will host Northern Colorado in the Sanford Pentagon in Sioux Falls. Tip-off is set for 7 o'clock. The women's basketball team will play Sunday at 5th-ranked South Carolina at 11 a.m., and men's basketball will host Kansas City at 3:30 at the Sanford Coyote Sports Center. The Coyote men's and women's basketball teams will begin Summit League play December 29th with a doubleheader at Western Illinois. The Coyotes will then travel to Fort Wayne, Indiana for a New Year's Day doubleheader. The Yotes return home January 5th for a doubleheader against Denver that is set to get underway at 1 o'clock. You can catch all of those games across the Coyote Sports Network. That's this week in Coyote Athletics. Catch a game, match, or meet soon. That's going to do it for us this week on Yotecast. Thanks for taking time to listen, and please subscribe and give us a rating. As always, we'd love to hear your feedback by emailing yotecast@usd.edu. Yotecast will be off for the next couple of weeks with the holiday break, but a new episode can be expected January 9th. If you travel for the holiday season, please do so safely. Have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, however you may be spending it. I'm John Thayer. Have a great weekend. We'll talk again soon. Go Yotes!
Thanks for listening to Yotecast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Coyote Sports Network.